Welcome and thank you very much for joining us today on the 24th edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lucia. We're presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com and our newest sponsor, AwesomeBlazersShirts.com, which has a wide selection of Blazers-inspired shirts and assorted varieties and styles in men's and women's sizes. So if you're interested in checking that out, you can do so at AwesomeBlazersShirts.com. As always, if you want to reach us at the show, you can do so at BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know how we're doing. You can offer suggestions, questions, and comments. That's BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com. With me today on the podcast is Bleacher Report, Bulls reporter Sean Hyken. He also writes for NBC's Pro Basketball Talk covering the NBA. In the past, he's contributed at USA Today, Vice Sports, Sports on Earth, and Hardwood Paroxysm. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Yeah, you bet, man. So you are from the Portland area, is that right?
I grew up in Northeast Portland, graduated from Grand High School 2008.
Cool. So did you play basketball growing up, or were you always kind of a fan?
It was more of a fan. I played when I was in like third, fourth, fifth grade. I never really went past that.
So when did your love of the game start developing? When did you start realizing that it was something that you wanted to maybe pursue as a career?
The career thing came a little bit later, but as far as when I became a fan, my first memory of watching basketball was like the 98 finals. So like Jordan's last series with the Bulls, when that shot that he hit in game six, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I watched that with my dad, and then I was like, this is awesome. Like, I want to know more about basketball. And of course, I mean, this was before YouTube and before like we had the internet, but you know, it was like the late 90s internet. You couldn't really like find stuff on that. So what I basically did at that point, and this is, of course, this is right before the lockout. So when I was like excited, man, when's the next season going to be getting it? My dad would just say, well, you know, the NBA and the players are arguing about money, so we don't know when it's going to begin. So that was fun. But, you know, in the meantime, like I started collecting cards. I started like reading all the books that they had about it at the library, learning about like Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and all that, all those guys. When the season finally started again, this was the lockout season in 99. My dad took me to a Blazers game, and they played the Spurs. I don't remember the date off the top of my head, but I've looked up the score. I found the score on Basketball Reference. This was Tim Duncan's second year in the league, I believe, and he had like 29 points and 10 rebounds. And Arvydas Sabonis, I think, had a huge game. He had like 28 and 11 or something like that. But yeah, so like if you're saying like what my origins of, as a basketball fan are, then, you know, yeah, it's those late 90s, early 2000s Blazers teams with like Damon and Rasheed and Brian Grant and Sabonis and Scottie Pippen, Stacey Augman.
Those are a lot of my formative years too. Like
Bonzi Wells.
Oh,
Jermaine O'Neal, Detlef Schrempf.
Oh, dude, Gary Grant, Rick
Gary
Brunson,
Grant,
Nikita Morganov,
Walt Williams,
Walt Williams,
Greg Anthony was in there at one point. Do you have the? Did you ever have the "Can I Get a Headband" rap CD?
Oh, can't one for my peeps, one for the fans,
fans
of the really,
of the really cheap,
cheap
seats. Yep, yeah, I have. Yeah, I had. I actually still have that. I don't really have any CDs anymore because I've gotten rid of most of them because I have no use for CDs. I kept that one.
No, that one's definitely in an old CD case somewhere at my parents' house for sure. It's probably worn out from playing it so much back in the day.
I definitely annoyed my parents with that one.
I don't know if it was that or Bust a Bucket that I like better. I think I like Bust a Bucket.
Yeah, Bust a Bucket is great. And then do you listen to the podcast that Joe and Casey do?
Rip City Report.
The song they have as the intro to that is great.
Oh yeah, it's like it's the Beat
no
Nuts,
one's made,
I think.
I don't remember. I don't know what it's called, but that one's great.
Yeah, that's a pretty dope song. The Blazers actually have a pretty solid history, I guess, leading up until those early 2000 teams of coming up with some pretty interesting team raps and songs. But
we might have that coming back at some point. I think Damian Lillard is supposed to be coming out with either a mixtape or an album or something, and like he was even bringing it back, you know, before that with the Four Bar Friday and all this other stuff, but. Like, I keep hearing he's got tracks that he's working on. Like, he's going to put out either a mixtape or an album at some point. I have no idea when, but I think that's coming.
Well, did you listen to that that radio interview that he did at All-Star Weekend?
Yeah.
Dude, like, that he's got legit flow for an NBA player.
He's got some talent. I actually, last season when I was in New Orleans for All-Star Weekend, I was – I somehow got on the list for this party that he had on the Friday night, and it was the Four Bar Friday party. They had it at this club where what he did was he took a bunch of the people who have been doing the Four Bar Friday competition every week on Instagram and had them do like a rap battle where they would each like rap for 15 seconds and did like a battle. And then after the Rising Stars Challenge, which he played in last year, he shows up like he basically went right from that game to this. And so he shows up at like 11 o'clock and then does a couple of verses for just for the crowd. And then he judged the finals of the competition. It was pretty cool.
Dude, I was pretty skeptical coming in because you have like Shaq, and I remember Chris Webber, Kobe Bryant.
Chris Webber, I don't know if you knew this. Chris Webber, did you ever get the Nas album "Hip Hop Is Dead" that came out in like 2006?
I stopped at Illmatic, dude.
There's a song called "Blunt Ashes" on the Nas 2006 album "Hip Hop Is Dead" that Chris Webber made the beat for.
Dude, and Kobe Bryant also had a rap album. I mean,
Kobe had one. Iverson tried to at one point. You know who's that?
Jules, 40 Jules. Bars.
Jules, yeah. You know, and then like I think like David Stern basically called him into his office and said, "Look, you cannot release this album because it was. I mean, it was Allen Iverson, so he was pretty, you know,
pretty big at the time.
Well, not that, but like he got pretty. You know, he didn't really. It wasn't a family friendly. Like with Dame stuff, it's all very clean. Like you could like if you were a kid and you got like I want to buy this NBA player's rap album, you could get Damian Lillard whatever his hypothetical album is, and your parents are probably going to be okay with it. Allen Iverson was saying some things that probably people's parents wouldn't have wanted their kids to be listening to.
Now, that's some pretty gangster stuff, and I remember Chris Webber actually. I feel like that album had a few iffy tracks on it.
Did Chris Webber actually put out an album?
Yeah, it was like, well, he went by C. Webb, I think was his rap name.
I need to get that.
And the song was actually called Gangsta Gangsta. I have no clue how I remember that, but
I need to get that. You know who's actually pretty good is Iman Shumpert.
For real? Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's got a mixtape that came out a couple of years ago. It's pretty good.
I'd like to see a battle between him and Lillard next time.
A collaboration.
Ooh.
Of course, I mean, the best rapper in the NBA, he's not even technically in the NBA anymore, but Steven Jackson is, like,
you
legit.
Think so?
He's not Steven Jackson isn't just, like, NBA player good. He's, like, legit good.
Yeah, Monet Ellis, Ask the Fellas. You heard that one? Dirk Nowitzki, Chandler Parsons. That was a pretty dope rap. Guess who you'll see? I got too much Monte. Monte Ellis. Ask the fellas who talk trash because they jealous. Laid back from the south, trying to hack up, I'll make you shut your mouth. Me and Monty on pick and pop. With Chandler 2, you know we can't be stopped. 16 elite, the foundation laid. Redefined the game with a one-legged fade. First come, first serve, face. Didn't Carlos Boozer get on a track one time? Oh, I mean,
I feel like Carlos Boozer was on a track a couple of years ago.
You want to just make this an NBA rap project podcast?
I mean, we could do that. We're kind of reaching the end of my knowledge of it, though.
You remember Rasheed Wallace back in the day? He had that.
Oh, Rasheed has freestyles. If you go, like, there are so many. Go on YouTube. I think I did a post on this on Paroxysm one time a couple years ago. Go on YouTube and just type in Rasheed Wallace freestyle. He's like gone on Philadelphia area radio stations and Detroit area radio stations. And I'm back when he was in Portland, I think he had a show on 95.5 back when that was the hip hop station.
Yeah. Sunday Night Raw, dude, with Rasheed Abdul Wallace.
Yeah. And he's not a bad rapper either. I would be down for a Rasheed album. Of course, there's literally nothing Rasheed could do that I wouldn't support. I think Rasheed needs to be not just a head coach, but also the commissioner of the NBA.
Agreed. I like he's got to be one of the biggest like cult heroes across the league right now for guys of our generation at least.
Without question. I had his posters. I had his jersey. He was my guy when I was like 9 or 10.
Is that your favorite Blazer of all time? If you had to pick
absolutely.
One,
100%.
Rasheed Wallace above Brandon Roy.
Yes.
Who?
In terms of my personal like pantheon of guys who were big for me growing up, Sheed is number one. And then I think Brian Grant is probably number two because he high-fived me after a playoff game one time.
Oh, you didn't wash your hand for a week, right?
No, I didn't. So he's up there. Damon Stoudemire is up there. And then, when we get to, like, you know, the Brandon Roy era, Travis Outlaw is somebody I liked a lot.
You remember those lean years in there, like the after the Wallace trade,
Oh,
starting in 04 to 06, like when Victor Criapo was starting.
Kriaba Haslang Jin was in there.
Hosung Jin. Who else? Sergei Monia was playing.
Sergei Monia, Sergio Rodriguez was their point guard savior for a couple of years.
Point guard of the future, dude.
Sebastian Telfair.
Oh my
And when
God.
you think about it, like really between Terry Porter and Damian Lillard, every point guard they drafted was terrible.
I guess we're
Like,
talking
just
about
because Dame
drafting.
Stoudemire was in Toronto before he was in Portland, so he
Yeah.
wasn't a guy they drafted. But like,
Strickland was a trade or a free agent,
Rod
right?
Strickland, yeah, Rod Strickland was with the Bullets before that. But like, if you go down the line, like Nolan Smith was not
Oh,
good. Nolan Smith was
please.
terrible. And by the way, I'll still never get over them drafting him over Kenneth Faried. That's like I'm totally. And in like the little part of my brain that's still a Blazer fan at this point, I've gotten a lot more, detached from it since I started actually covering the league nationally. But I'm even as like the part of me that's still a fan, I'm totally over the Odin Durant thing. 'Cause like at the time it made sense.
No,
We
I
don't
mean, how could you fault?
need to
How could you
rehash
fault
that.
him?
Like I'm totally over how that worked out. Like it sucks that it worked out that way, but I'm fine with that. The one that I'm never gonna let go of is Nolan Smith or Kenneth Faried. Because even at the time, they needed a backup power forward who could rebound, and Kenneth Faried was right there, one of the best rebounders in college basketball history. And they took Kyrie Irving's backup.
A 4-year guard at Duke.
Most of the mock drafts I saw before the draft didn't even have him going in the first round.
Literally over the best rebounder in the entire country in college basketball that year, right? Which
And
is
2 years later, he's out of the league.
that rebounding is probably the like one of the main skills that's translatable to the NBA from college,
If
right?
you're a
So
good rebounder in college, you're going to be a good rebounder in the NBA, or at least you're going to be acceptable. And with the right coaching, you'll be able to still be effective. Yeah, no, Faried would have been great.
I don't want to
And I
wax
thought that at the
poetic on
time,
that one.
a lot of stuff, like a lot of draft stuff. You can think, maybe the Blazers should have taken Giannis last year, but a lot of teams missed on Giannis. Kenneth Faried, even at the time, that was just he was right there. I wanted him before that draft. I didn't think he was going to fall to the Blazers. And
Same.
then when he was right there and they took Nolan Smith, I was just like, what are you doing?
I thought Fareed was literally the most obvious no-brainer at 21 or whatever they were. Like,
Right.
how was Fareed not a no-brainer there? I don't know,
Was there
but
what was their biggest positional need? It was a backup power, because who were they even throwing out the year before as LaMarcus's backup? It was like,
not
you're
Fry, was it?
no, the no Fry was a few years
It was
earlier. this
before
was this was
Hixon.
the this was the year this was the Dallas year. This was the Brandon Roy's last year, was the year before the Faried draft. So that
Kurt
was like,
Thomas?
what,
Kurt Thomas? Maybe?
maybe Kurt Thomas,
Sean Marks? I guess
Sean
that.
Marks. Sean Marks was playing heavy minutes. I think Dante Cunningham was playing, or was no, he was in the
Pendergraph.
Jeff Pendergraf. Yeah,
Who was a stud, by the way? I
he
liked his
was
game.
before he had the ACL.
True.
He was good. He was good his rookie year, and then he had the ACL.
I mean, it is what it is. It was. So, I mean, obviously they needed the backup. They blew that on Nolan Smith, but
And Nolan Smith was out of the league in 2 years.
that brings up an interesting point I wanted to ask you, because as people who came up watching the Blazers, I think we're no strangers to disappointment. So, of the last 15 years, your biggest disappointment between Western Conference Finals 2000, Game 7, Fareed not getting picked, instead taking Smith, or Brandon Roy's retirement, or D, all of the above or none of the above.
Oh, Western Conference Finals in 2000, no question, because I was 10. And when you're 10, that stuff affects you a lot more than it does when you're in your 20s. When you're in your 20s, you have a little bit more perspective where you're just like, okay, they'll be fine next year. This draft pick isn't the worst thing in the world. But when you're 10, and it really seems like they're going to, because I think they would have beaten the Pacers if they had gone to the finals
They
that
would
year.
have easy, five
So
games tops.
you're thinking, wow, this team, like, especially because like the year before they went to the conference finals against San Antonio and they got swept.
Hey,
And so then
Sean Elliott stepped out of bounds.
Sean Elliott absolutely stepped out of bounds. So you have the so you, then you, you know they're in the conference finals. They come back from this 3-1 deficit. What were they up by? 13-14. They have a double digit lead going into the fourth
15.
quarter. And you just think, okay, they just need to play one more quarter, and then they're going to the finals, and they're probably going to win the championship. And then they just go out there and miss. What do they miss? Like their first 13 or 14 shots of the quarter?
And then Shaq, obviously,
You're
just
right.
dominating.
And then Shaq just went nuts. And then there was, you know, that alley-oop that's become a commercial since then from Kobe.
Was that when Jermaine O'Neal was playing pretty heavy minutes?
Yes.
And it probably should have been Sabonis? Or was he in foul trouble?
I think he was. I've tried not to rewatch. I've rewatched a lot of those old Blazer games. I try not to rewatch that one too much. By the way, if you want to talk about Blazers disappointments, and this is kind of low key, this is not really at the level of you know, the Odin Durant thing or Brandon Roy's early retirement. They let Jermaine O'Neal go way too early. He
Yeah.
became, you know, an all-star and, you know, arguably one of the 10 or 15 best players in the league after they traded him to Indiana.
Hey, Dell Davis was a stud though in Portland. I'll stand by that. Dude, I was stoked to get Dell Davis. He was like 30 years old at the
I mean, I
time, a
guess at the
proven
time, but I
vet.
also didn't really understand any of that stuff when I was 11 when they made that trade. But they, in retrospect, they let Jermaine go way too early.
Yeah, but was he, I mean, could how realistically could they have kept him behind Brian Grant and Rasheed Wallace?
But they got they Brian Grant wasn't there after that
Right?
either. It was after the 2000 Conference Finals run, they traded him to Miami for Sean Kemp.
Well,
You go,
who?
okay, there you go. That's
Is
the
that the
one.
biggest disappointment?
That's the one. Brian Grant for Sean Kemp. Because especially because at the time, like, I didn't have League Pass. I don't even think League Pass was a thing then. So like, when I had, oh, the Blazers traded Brian Grant, I was sad because he was one of my favorite players. But then I was like, oh, they're getting Sean Kemp. So the only Sean Kemp that I knew about was like the Sonics Sean Kemp from the 90s, who was awesome. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. We're gonna get Sean Kemp. And then, you know,
You had
it
no
turns out
idea he was 290 pounds.
290-pound cocaine-addled version of Sean Kemp.
Dude, Sean Kemp was literally my number one favorite player in the NBA growing up. And I
Yeah.
remember when they traded for him, I was ecstatic that they
Because
brought my favorite player.
you think you're going to get the mid-90s Sonics Sean Kemp.
I would have settled for the 1998 Cleveland Cavaliers
I'm
Sean Kemp.
okay with that too.
No, that was God, Brian Grant for Sean Kemp. That's gotta be. I mean, the thing about the Brandon Roy thing is that he means so much to a generation of Blazers fans because so many of us suffered.
This is something I've heard some debate on among different Blazers fans and people. I absolutely think they should retire his number.
Oh, you think they should retire number 7? What's the case for that?
Because, I mean, I just think what you were saying, what he means to a whole generation of Blazers fans and what, you know, basically that franchise was a joke. Basically, from starting, really, I mean, we're coming off like the really bad jailblazer years, but really the last time they were relevant was that 2000 Western Conference Finals run. After that, like, they made the playoffs a few more times, but they were out in the first round all the time. And then, you know, then they had, you know, the jailblazers years, and then they were just one of the worst teams in the league. They were just this total joke. And
Yeah,
then they had the Roy,
21 wins in 06.
right. And then the Roy Aldridge draft happens, and suddenly, oh, this is great. This is this likable young team. And then for it, you know, for his knees to just fall apart the way they did. And it was,
Sad, to
I
say the
think, I mean,
least.
'cause here's the thing, in terms of just like importance to the franchise, if you look at, if you want to think about who, you know, the most important guys are, you'd have to probably put Walton and Drexler at the top.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
then I think Brandon Roy is probably third.
You think so?
Yeah.
Shoot. Oh man, I don't even. That's interesting because I would never even. The debate for me would just be either Walton or Clyde Drexler.
Right, it's those two at the top, but then who's number three? I
I mean,
think it's Brandon.
you could say Aldridge at this point. You could make a case for Aldridge right now, probably.
Right, yeah, but I think at the time, but with Aldridge, it kind of took a while for Aldridge to get to where he is in terms of standing, because he's really, it was really only 2 years ago that people started maybe giving him the respect that he maybe should have gotten longer than that, because he came in the same year as Roy. Roy is the one that wins Rookie of the Year that year. Like, Roy is the one that's like, he's like their next guy. He's the face of the franchise. The next year, they have the Odin draft, and you know, it's like this is the big three, Roy, Aldridge, and Odin. But Aldridge is really Roy and Odin are the two guys that are like the ones that everyone gravitates towards. And Aldridge is sort of the, he's like if Roy and, in terms of a standing, in terms of like their stature, if Roy and Odin were LeBron and Dwayne Wade in terms of like public perception, Aldridge was the Chris Bosh. We're like, I mean, he's a great player, but he's, you know, he wasn't the guy that like was going to sell a lot of tickets or was going to sell jerseys or whatever the way that Roy and Odin were. And then, you know, Odin's knees explode, Roy's knees give out. Those couple of seasons where Aldridge was their only guy, they were terrible. And then they draft Lillard, and he's immediately the new face of the franchise. And like, he's the young, you know, rookie of the year, makes the All-Star team his second year, all this stuff, really. And meanwhile, LaMarcus has just been maintaining the whole time. He's been playing at an extremely high level. I think it's really only a couple of years ago that people started to even put him in the conversation of, you know, greatest Blazers of all time, you know, who's the... You know, who are those guys? I mean, he's absolutely in that conversation. I just think in terms of, like, importance to the franchise's history and basically making them not a joke anymore, I think you have to put Brandon Roy in that discussion.
Yeah, I'll give you Roy on that one. I mean, I guess some older fans might make the case for someone like Maurice Lucas,
Jerome Kersey,
You know, Billy Ray Bates, all kinds of guys. But, you know, I can't see the thing about Roy is that one was devastating because you got the taste of it. You got rookie of the year. You got second year all-star.
He was top 10 player in the league that 08-09 season.
It was bananas. And you had him coming back after surgery after 10 days. Was that against the Suns or the Rockets?
I thought it was a huge mistake at the time.
I thought it was a bad idea, but it's hard to not have an emotional attachment to a guy after.
But then, like when he comes out and they play the Rocky music and they win that game, I mean, at the time you can just be like, okay, I'm just gonna enjoy this. But yeah, in retrospect, that was a terrible idea. They weren't gonna win it, even if they maybe somehow won that series. They weren't gonna win the title that year.
No. How many times have you watched the YouTube clip of B-Roy scoring 24 against the Mavs in 2011?
More times than I care to remember.
I have a copy
of that entire game on somewhere on one of my hard drives somewhere. I pull it out sometimes.
I legitimately cannot watch it all the way through. I have to like take it in chunks. It just gets me too emotional just thinking about like Brandon Roy, what he meant to the team, and how sad it was, the injury, and just like you just see the guy's knees just like betraying him.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this guy with all this natural talent who's never had to, you know, deal with those kind of debilitating things to the degree that they were. He'd always had, you know, knee issues from high school on, but he was always able to get by at Washington and then in Portland. But the way it just kind of happened in front of everyone's eyes, it's hard for me to take.
In case you're wondering, in case you're curious, I've heard that Brandon Roy is doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, actually, I have been wondering about that because it seems like eventually he would turn up as maybe some kind of a coach at Garfield up in Seattle or UW.
Yeah, he's doing some like volunteer assistant coaching with his high school team. I found this out because this was maybe a month ago, the Clippers were here in Chicago. And so I was hanging out in their locker room before the game. And I saw Jamal Crawford there, and just because, like, you know, all those Seattle guys are all tight. So I just, out of curiosity, I just went up and was like, hey, Jamal, so how's Brandon Roy doing? Have you been in touch with him? And he told me Brandon's doing well. He's just kind of laying low, hanging out with his kids, you know, kind of staying out of the spotlight. But I heard Jamal said he's in a good place right now. He's doing well. So good for him.
Yeah, I think a lot of Blazer fans are kind of hoping that he'd come back and maybe embrace more of a community ambassador role, kind of like that, you know, Kersey role maybe or something.
Think he wants to stay in. I think, well, because like his kids are in Seattle, his kids are in school there. I think maybe years down the line when his kids are out of the house, he might do something like that. But from what I heard from a few different people, he's kind of just happy living his life in Seattle and not really being involved in the NBA.
Good for him, man. Good for him because things ended on such a bad note.
Oh my God! And then the Minnesota year, it was a disaster. He could not move. It was so painful to watch because, like, I really wanted him, you know, as much as it was weird to see him with a different team, I really wanted him to be good when he signed with the Timberwolves. I was like, okay, if he's going to do this, I want him to be good. But he was awful, and he played in, like, 5 games, and then he had to have knee surgery again.
Yeah.
And I had tickets. I had tickets for their game, the Blazers-Timberwolves game, like, around the Thanksgiving, thinking that this was going to be Brandon Roy's first game back in Portland, and it was going to be this huge thing. But, like, 2 weeks into the season, he already had to have season-ending surgery.
Dude, Will Barton's coming back on Saturday.
The revenge tour. Will Barton's been kind of balling since he's got traded to Denver.
People's champ, dude.
Yeah, no, he's been good. He's the kind of guy like that might just be what he might just be a guy that like puts up numbers on a bad team like that. Like I don't, and that's not even like a slight at him, but like, you know, he's just like a guy on a young team like that without a lot of structure. He's gonna put up some numbers. He's gonna make some entertaining plays. So I'm happy for him. I'm glad he's getting more minutes now because he wasn't gonna get those minutes in Portland.
He's unrestricted this summer, I think, right?
No, I think he's restricted he might be unrestricted, but I think he's restricted.
He'll get paid somewhere, probably, judging off this performance with the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Unfortunately, we're not... Are we seeing the same thing out of Thomas Robinson?
I've kind of bailed on watching the Sixers at this point.
I don't blame you.
Just because, like, I mean, it's not even out of them being bad to watch, because they're actually not unwatchable. They actually have some fun guys, and like they actually have a good defensive foundation at this point. But it's just at this point in the season, we have like less than a month to go. I want to focus on watching the teams that I'm going to have to be thinking about during the playoffs. So the Sixers are just not on my radar. But, you know, from what I've seen, I follow some Sixers people on Twitter. I see things about him having good games. It seems like he's found a place there, which... You know, I hope he sticks around because it does suck for the guy. You know, he was the number 5 pick in the draft. He's already been traded, what, 3 different times? Been on 5 teams.
And that whole Brooklyn debacle.
Right, and he was going to go to waivers. Brooklyn, and then Sam Hinkie was just like, well, no, I'm going to take him.
No, how much can what can one dude get jerked around?
Yeah, no, and I feel bad for the guy, and like I've only ever talked to him a couple of times, but you know, he seems like a good kid. He seems like he works hard. He seems like he just wants to do well. He's a talented player. You know, when sometimes he wasn't super consistent for the Blazers, but there were times where he was going out there getting rebounds, you know, getting some energy, you know, scoring around the basket. You know, I think he can be a useful NBA rotation player. I just hope he sticks somewhere.
It'd be nice to see him get like 2 solid seasons to prove himself with somebody.
With a team.
With anybody.
With a team, because he had 1.5 years basically with the Blazers, but he was sort of in and out of the rotation. If he could go to like a team that's not going to do anything next year, so I don't know, then I don't want to wish the Knicks on anybody but the Knicks.
T-Rob could put up some monster numbers.
If Lou Amundsen is putting up like all-star numbers on the Knicks right now, I think Thomas Robinson could put up some good numbers with the Knicks.
Yeah, how many of the starting 5 of the Knicks can you name right now off the top of your head?
Do we count Alexei Shved? Because he's injured right now.
I'll give you points for that.
Okay, so Alexei Shved, Langston Galloway, Lance Thomas, Lou Amundsen.
One more.
Bargnani.
Oh, you're a true pro, man. You know your stuff.
I have to. I try to avoid. Well, I'm gonna see the Knicks up close and personal on Saturday
against Chicago.
Yeah, they're here.
That's gonna be a beatdown.
Carmelo Anthony revenge tour from the sidelines.
Great, good for him.
Yeah,
in street
get your
clothes.
Get your money, Carmelo.
Keep cashing those checks, dude. Right, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him for doing what he did, but I mean, if he really wanted to win, he should have come to Chicago.
Dwayne Wade, how many was that, 6 years ago when he flirted with the Bulls?
Well, that wasn't real. He was not real. He was never going to the Bulls.
That leverage?
He was basically, if A, leverage, B, he was just kind of being a double agent and just kind of hearing their pitch so he could go back to Pat Riley and say, this is what the Bulls are trying to do.
Yo, but Boozer did that to the Jazz. Right? When he was up to re-sign with Utah.
Oh, with Cleveland, you mean?
Was that? Oh, sorry, Cleveland, yeah.
Right, with the Cavs. Like, he committed to re-sign with the Cavs, and then he decided to go to Utah instead. Well, remember, and you want to talk about big dodged bullets. We talk about big disappointments with the Blazers. You want to talk about dodged bullets. Remember when they had an agreement with Hedo Turkoglu for 5 years, $50 million?
Are you freaking kidding me?
And then his wife decided she wanted to live in Toronto, so he went with the Raptors instead.
Such a blessing in disguise.
That was one of the worst contracts in the league for like 4 years until the Magic bought him out.
How many dudes have fought like made that kind of money and fallen off that hard? Besides him, I could think of Arenas, Rashard Lewis, maybe.
Arenas had the knee injuries.
They all played for the Magic too. Jeez, they were taking on some terrible contracts.
You know who is making $8.5 million this year with the Raptors?
Let me guess. Oh, yeah, it's the Euro. The Euro dude.
Oh, no.
Amir Johnson.
Landry Fields.
Landry, what's he playing? Like 7 minutes a game, maybe?
He's not playing.
Collecting did not play coaching decisions.
He's a keep getting them checks. Team captain.
Are you kidding me? 8.5 million years for Landry Fields?
Or six or seven. He's making a ridiculously high amount of money for Landry Fields in 2015. And the reason they signed him, do you remember when they signed him?
No, I don't recall.
Because this was hilarious. Because I think the reason that they signed him was because this was the summer after Linsanity. And this was the summer that Daryl Morey had those poison pill contracts for Lin and Ashiq. Where it would have been really hard for the teams to match them. And the Knicks were going to go after Steve Nash. And the Raptors wanted Steve Nash just because of the Canada connection.
Right.
So the Raptors were like, okay, well, we're going to throw this weird poison pill, you know, offer sheet at Landry Fields because then the Knicks will match.
Because then their bluff.
Because then the Knicks match, and then we'll be the front row. Then they won't have enough money to sign Nash, so we'll sign Nash. And the Knicks were like, oh, you want to give Landry Fields 3 years, $20 million? Go right ahead. We're not going to match that.
That's, dude, I love it when that kind of stuff happens, man. That Lin contract, that doesn't look too good.
Time? I mean, I get it. I got the Lin contract. Like, because Lin, I mean, he's fallen off a cliff the last 2 years, but his first year in Houston, he was solid.
I don't want to talk about the Lakers too much. but let's talk about some injuries, dude, because I feel like this year there's been more, maybe this is just kind of recency bias, but it feels like there's been more high profile players getting injured like long term this year. If you think about Russ Westbrook missed a number of games, Kevin Durant's missed a number of games, Paul George before the season. I could go on and on. I mean, even rookies, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle early in the season.
Right, but then not even just that, you know, Dwight Howard played tonight, but he hadn't played since, what, middle of January?
Yeah, it's been a solid 2 months at least.
It's been like two months for him. Blake Griffin just missed like a month. He came back last week, but he missed a while. And you know, you're not even talking about, you have the guy on the podcast that covers the Bulls, and, you know, I've been dealing with it all year with different guys. Derrick Rose, obviously, we think he'll be back in a week or two. But Jimmy Butler just came back a couple games ago. Taj Gibson has been in and out all year. Joakim Noah, but like Derrick Rose, obviously, is the big one with the Bulls. But that's, you know, that was a 4 to 6 week timeline. So you got him. Kobe obviously had season-ending surgery. Not that the Lakers were going to do anything anyway, but you know, Kobe's still one of the most popular guys in the league. Even LeBron, like LeBron, has never missed any kind of significant time, and he had that 2 week. That he took off.
Like, if we're talking about, you know, like Rose or Andrew Bogut, I would say those guys are probably injury prone, for lack of a better term.
Right.
You know, and then the Paul George thing.
That was just a freak.
Fluke. That's a fluke.
That was a freak play.
Staph infection on the elbow for Griffin. That's a fluke. But then you got like these nagging injuries to guys. And if you look at the Blazers, I mean,
right.
You look what they're going through right now with Wesley and Batum, Aldridge, Kamen. Lillard's had jammed fingers all season.
Right. Batum. I mean, Batum was basically playing on one wrist until the All-Star break, and then he got it right. He's been a completely different player since the All-Star break. But you know, before the All-Star break, he was awful, and that was because he had a wrist ligament that was either torn or something. That you probably know more about the specifics of that than I do, but he had a wrist thing.
Yeah, he was pretty mum about it, just kind of saying it's something that he had to play through, and that, you know, the week or however many days off he had during the All-Star break to recharge his batteries allowed him enough time to heal. But I think, you know, he felt a little bit of pressure to play because he had played all summer with France, and then LaMarcus Aldridge had the thumb injury and was willing to play through it. So you kind of have this convergence where Batum isn't really helping the team as much as he really could be at all, maybe 60% capacity.
Uh-huh.
But he probably felt pressure from a lot of angles to be out there and to help his teammates.
Especially because this summer he said he wasn't going to play in the FIBA tournament.
Right.
And then he did. And that was something that just kind of got, you know, he ended up doing that, and that was something that a lot of fans were frustrated about, and which, I mean, I honestly don't blame him whatsoever for doing that, but yeah, and then, God, the Wesley Matthews injury was just,
nice.
That one's a killer.
That took the wind right out of the sails.
It really was. I thought the Blazers had an outside chance of getting to the finals before that happened. Now I think they would be considered successful to come out of the first round.
I hate to agree with you on that, but it would be hard to put up a legitimate argument against that, I think, to
yeah.
be quite honest. Unless,
well, it depends on who they get. I think they could still beat Dallas.
I think most teams in the West could probably take Dallas in 7 games, but if you look at, like, 2011, they caught fire when they weren't necessarily...
Right, but Dirk was 4 years younger then, and so was Tyson Chandler, and this is not the Dallas of that 4 years ago.
What about pushing San Antonio to 7 games last spring? No? Not convincing enough?
Did you... Yeah, but this is a different team that...
I'm not a Mavs believer. Don't get me wrong. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
I think Dallas is the most beatable, and I could be totally wrong. Monte Ellis is totally just going to average 50 in that series because I said that, but I think they're the most beatable team. The Clippers, I thought, were going to be kind of easy to beat, but seem like they're kind of peaking at the right time. They've really gotten it together, which is ridiculous because their bench is a disaster.
Right.
But San Antonio would destroy the Blazers. Houston, I think, would beat them if they have Dwight back.
Golden State, Memphis.
Oh, God, Golden
matchups.
State. Golden State, Memphis are both not ideal matchups. Oklahoma City, I think they could beat, but they're not going to get Oklahoma City because Oklahoma City is going to be the 1-8. And right. So they're going to, if they don't have Durant and Ibaka back, they're just going to get killed by Golden State in the first round.
So the Blazers are pretty much, assuming they can win the division, and I think it's a combination of 7 Blazer wins and OKC losses at this point.
Right.
Which would wrap up the Northwest division for them. I don't want to say it's in the bag, but just for the conversation's sake, let's say they get the Northwest and get the number 4 seed. Potentially they would be looking at, would it be the Clippers and the Mavs in that 4-5 matchup for the most part?
Yeah, I think so. I think right now they'd play the Clippers, right, in the first round?
I haven't. I mean, these things change so often. But, yeah, I mean, I think Dallas is probably the most beatable team right now, you would have to think. The Clippers, with Chris Paul and the kind of defense that he can put on Damian Lillard, we saw it earlier on in the season when Doc Rivers decided to trap and put a lot of pressure on Lillard and kind of force him into making decisions with the ball. He kind of struggled with that a little bit. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he can rise up above that, but it's definitely something that's proven in the past to be a problem for him. So I don't see the Clippers as any sort of ideal kind of a matchup, in my opinion.
Well, no, especially now that Blake Griffin is back.
Yeah, there's Blake Griffin, Chris Paul,
DeAndre.
Jordan, Redick and Barnes out there on the 3-point line.
Jamal Crawford, I don't think, is going to come back this season, we don't think.
Well, that would be a bonus because he is definitely seems to be a Blazer killer.
Yeah.
I guess he kills a lot of teams off the bench.
But, I mean, I think you just want to, with the Clippers, you just want Austin Rivers to beat you, I guess. You want Hedo Turkoglu to beat you.
Glenn Davis.
Is Jordan Hamilton still on the team? I know he was on 10-day contracts at one point.
I think they secured him for the rest of the season, but I'm not positive.
Nate Robinson.
God, that's an ugly bench.
It's not good.
I saw one of the Clippers games at the Moda Center this year, and Glenn Davis played...
Whoa, hold on a second. What did you just call it?
At the...
You saw the Clippers game at the Rose Garden.
Oh, listen, I am an unbiased media member right now. I don't...
So am I, but I still refuse to call it the Moda Center.
All right.
As far as I'm concerned, they still play at the Rose Garden, and they still get chalupas when you score 100 points.
I'll compromise at the Rose Quarter.
Sure.
at the Moda Center at the Rose Quarter.
Okay.
I attended the Clippers game earlier this year, and geez Louise, I remember watching Glenn Davis. He probably played 8 minutes in that game, I have never seen a dude showboat that much for doing so little on the court. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Speaking of NBA players' musical endeavors, you've heard Big Baby's song, right?
Is it, what is it, like some soulful blues or jazz
No,
or something? Or...
no, it's a jock jam. It's called Big Baby Gonna Turn It Up.
Is it one of those kind of like I'm in on the joke too kind of things?
I don't know, but he did this back when he was in Orlando, and they used to play it every time he scored. It's called Big Baby Gonna Turn It Up. It's great. You should check it out. It's probably one of the better songs in the history of American music.
I want nothing to do with any of Glenn Davis's recording projects off the court, with all due respect. But we were talking about these injuries this year,
right.
And something I wanted to kind of, you know, check the temperature on with you was, you know, we've heard quite a bit about shortening the NBA season.
Okay.
And because I think 82 games and the way it's compacted right now with, what is it, a 7-game preseason? And then
I think 8 is what they normally play.
7 or 8, whatever the case is. And then you have a seven game matchup in the first round, second, third, fourth. So potentially, you know, a team could be playing, what is it, upwards of 28 games?
Right.
In the playoffs. So that's 30-something, you know, 100 and 112 or something games between pretty much Halloween and July. That's kind of a compacted schedule in there. And you know, I feel like we're really kind of feeling it. We have so many 5 games in 7 nights, so many back-to-backs. It's pretty bonkers to me. What do you think? It's something that needs to be re-examined?
I think it definitely is. I don't think they're going to shorten the schedule like ever, because the problem with that is that the players would have to give back money, and the players aren't going to do that. There's no way they'd go for that.
So there's this interesting dichotomy there where it would be beneficial for the players' health, you know, to shorten
the season to even just 75 games and cut out a couple of the back-to-backs.
So yeah, that would be to their physical benefit.
But then they'd have to give back that money. They'd have to give back the checks for those 7 or 10 games that they cut out.
And so the money is going to be the factor here.
And the players' union's never going to go for that. One compromise that I've heard, and I think Tony Parker is the one that I heard suggest this, but then like I think Zach Lowe has said that their league might actually consider this. Cut the preseason from 8 games to 4 and spread the regular season out over those 2 weeks that you would cut out of the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, that would, if you cut down on the back-to-backs, I think that's a huge one, because I think a prime example would be the Blazers. Earlier tonight, they went into Utah after playing Golden State last night. And what ended up happening was they went down to the wire against a Utah team that was without
Gordon Hayward
and Rodney Hood, who's, you know, scoring 13 points
well
a game
lately,
right
yeah.
now. So it's like Joe Ingles, right? Is the
Joe Ingles was – I only saw parts. I saw basically the fourth quarter of that game.
I respect the guy, and I really like him. I think he's a great role player, and I have nothing against any of the Jazz players. You know, but to see the Blazers with LaMarcus Aldridge coming back, and, you know, and Damian Lillard – being, you know, ostensibly healthy and whatnot, I don't think that game would have been as close as it were, you know, had the Blazers not played, you know, last night, you know, against Golden State as long as they did. It's just, plus it was a 7:30 TNT game, so that one didn't even get started till about 8 o'clock, you know. So the schedule right now it seems pretty detrimental to the players' health to me. I would like to see some kind of a compromise. I don't understand where they're gonna find it.
Well, really, just the back-to-backs is what needs to go. If you can keep the 82 games, which I think is probably going to happen at this point just because of the money issues, if you can somehow keep that but just cut down on the back-to-backs, and maybe what that is, and I don't know how this is going to work with the new TV deal, but maybe instead of only letting – and I think Turner does have an exclusive on that Thursday night spot.
Right.
But – if you can even make it so that there's more than 2 games on Thursday nights, then that'll allow them to spread the schedule out a little bit more so that there aren't those nights where there are, you know, 13 or 14 games on, like on Wednesdays or Fridays. Spread some of those out. I don't know. There are ways to do it. I don't have the answers, but yeah, I certainly agree with you that if not shortening the schedule, which doesn't seem like it's really realistic, cutting the back-to-backs and the 5 games in 7 nights.
Let's say they even settle on some kind of a financial agreement to say, I guess they're not going to shorten the season, right? So
Right.
you don't have to really worry about the the history, the records being affected. You could still compare apples to apples, right?
But here's the thing, though. Like, does anybody really care that much about those
Right.
records? Like, nobody. And here's the thing, because like, do you know what the record for not big, high for most points scored in the season is?
Most points scored in a season?
Do you know offhand what it is?
Wilt Chamberlain?
Do you know? But you don't know the number offhand. It's not
50
like. It's not like. It's not like.
times 82, so
Okay. It's not
4,000.
the point. The point being, it's not. There's no it's not this it's not the kind of thing where it's like the numbers it's like okay like I'll give you an example like with baseball everybody even if you don't really follow baseball that much you know how many home runs Hank Aaron hit you know how many home runs Babe Ruth hit you know how many games straight Joe DiMaggio hit like the NBA just doesn't have those numbers that are just ingrained in the fans' memories like if you Do you know exactly off the top of your head how many points Kareem Abdul-Jabbar scored in his career? Do you know? I mean, it's right. You know the range of these,
32,338.
but you just looked that up, right?
No, that's a guess off the top of my head. I know it's in the 32,000 range
Right.
somewhere
So
in there.
you right. So it's not a number. Whereas, can you? Okay. Well, do you know how many home runs Barry Bonds hit?
714.
That's Babe Ruth.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Seven, what was Bonds? 781?
762.
Oh, okay.
Hank Aaron was 755. But see, that's the point. There are those numbers. Those are numbers that everyone knows.
Right.
Like that are fans of the sport. There's no numbers like that with basketball as far as career numbers. Like you don't know the exact number of assists. You know that John Stockton has the most assists over a career in NBA history. You don't know that exact number of assists. I don't know that exact number.
10,000. I don't know. Yeah,
I don't I
that's.
have no idea.
I personally don't care about the stat argument. I was just kind of grasping at straws to kind of see what, somebody who's not in support of shortening the season would try to come up with as an argument. And to me, if it's the stats, look, the 3-point line was added halfway through the NBA's tenure as a professional
Right,
sport.
and then there was that goofy year in the early 90s where they brought the 3-point line in.
Oh, I wasn't around for that one.
That was like they brought it in from 23 feet to 21 feet.
Dude, that see if that happened nowadays, whew,
Yeah.
Stephen Curry would be averaging 48 points a game.
Yeah, exactly. And like they might even it's kind of a kind of thing where I've even heard a couple of people suggest, and not that this is at all, imminent or that they're even talking about this, but maybe moving it back a little bit just because there are so many 3-pointers being shot by guys like him and Kyle Korver.
Or
Like
adding the
I heard
4-point line.
I think like Haberstroh and Simmons were talking about that on the BS report a couple days ago.
Yeah, isn't that kind of bring it out maybe a 26 or 27 foot 4-point line?
That's not gonna ever happen.
Like NBA
That's
Jam Tournament Edition for
So
Super
funny, so
Nintendo.
funny, so funny story. I was back when I was with USA Today. This was December 2013. I flew to Atlanta and did a story where I did a behind the scenes of the filming of an episode of Inside the NBA. And so I spent a couple days at their studios and talking to all the analysts and producers and stuff. And so at one point on the Thursday night, I was sitting outside the green room with Shaq. It was just me and Shaq sitting on a couch watching a game. And he just turns to me out of nowhere and goes, "Do you think they're ever going to add a spot on the floor where you shoot from there, you get 10 points?"
Like Jock Jams or whatever that was for
Rock and
MTV,
jock. Rock
Rockin'
and
Jock. I mean, like Bill Bellamy out there shooting from the
Yeah,
10-point line.
exactly. Exactly. You know, J.R. Smith would just pull up from there every single time down the floor. Every single time.
He doesn't need a 4-point line to pull up from 30
Antoine
feet.
Walker would come out of retirement if they
Dude,
did that.
do you remember his nickname, by the way?
Who?
Antoine Walker.
Tuan? Did he have another nickname?
I believe it was employee number 8, right?
I do not know that.
Do you see, I feel like that's what it was, and I bring that up because I feel like that's one of my all-time favorite NBA nicknames.
That's pretty good. I didn't know that. Did you know that according to Basketball Reference, Channing Frye's nickname is Buffet of Goodness?
I do have the backstory for that, I believe,
What is it? Because I didn't realize. I didn't. There's no way that's a real thing.
It
Is
absolutely
it?
is 100%.
What?
So yes. Also, side note, Basketball Reference is endlessly entertaining if you go there and just click on random names to find out what dudes' nicknames were, because I found out Patrick Ewing was the Hoya Destroya.
There's no way Patrick Ewing was the.
Dudes, like
No, I mean, I believe you. I'm
that's
sure it says it
legit.
on there, but like,
That's a dope nickname.
it's pretty good. Do you remember when Glenn Davis tried to change his nickname from Big Baby to Uno Uno?
No, and thankfully it didn't catch on.
This was no, yeah. Then this was when Chad Johnson was Chad Ochocinco, like when he had legally changed his name to that. So that was kind of a fad for like a year. And Glenn Davis was like, "I'm not Big Baby anymore. I'm Uno Uno."
Yeah, that well,
And
that didn't end
everyone
up
was just
working.
collectively was just like, no, you're not.
Only Shaq gets to decide his own nicknames.
Well,
Sorry,
Kobe
dude.
came up with the Black Mamba himself, so and that when that's when that one stuck. I think Nick Young came up with Swaggy P by himself, so yeah, there are exceptions, but as a general rule, yeah, you don't get to pick your own nickname.
No, not at all. Channing Frye, though, if I recall, when he was, see, they traded Zach Randolph to the Knicks in 07 and brought back Frye.
That was the year of the Oden draft, right? Yeah,
Yes.
they did it the same day.
They brought back Steve
He
Franchise,
brought
too.
back Steve Francis and bought him out.
Franchise, that's a dope nickname. I say dope way too much for a guy my age.
So I say cool. I don't know if I've said it on this podcast, but that's definitely a staple of my everyday vocabulary.
At any rate, Channing Frye, he comes over. And I think it might have been Jason Quick of the Oregonian. Don't quote me on this, but they were kind of interviewing Channing Frye, one of the guys from the local paper, and they were saying, you're a big who can kind of, you can spread the floor out, you can, get a few rebounds here and there, play a little bit of defense. How would you describe your game? And that was what he said to the reporter. He goes, "I would describe it as a buffet of goodness."
That's great.
Boom, and it
And then it
clicked.
just caught on, or did it not? Didn't even
No.
it didn't catch on. I've never heard anybody because I was looking at his Basketball Reference page a couple weeks ago for something, and it said that on there, and I was just like, there's no way that's his nickname.
No, there's like 100%. I don't think there's a single commentator in the NBA who's
I don't
calling
think Channing
games who
Frye
can.
remembers that he has that nickname.
And the buffet of goodness rings one up from behind the arc. I mean,
Birdman is another good self-given one that has actually caught on.
well, with him, you kind of just let him do his thing. I don't think anybody was going to argue with whatever he decided to call himself.
Right.
Dude, he's a modern day Cherokee Parks student. You remember him?
Yes, of course I remember Cherokee Parks.
Classic, dude. I guess we could probably talk about 90s players all day.
I have this box of cards that my last year of college, I spent a summer painting dorm rooms on the U of O campus. And when
Brutal.
I went to Summer League that year for paroxysm, I came back and I told my supervisor where I had gone, and she was like, "Oh, I have this box of 90s basketball cards that I'm trying to that I has taken up space on my shelf. You want them?" And I was just like, "Yes, I do." And so there are some names in there. There's like there's a there was a different player named Irvin Johnson that isn't
Yep,
Magic.
played for the
There's
Bucks.
yeah.
Nah, Popeye Jones, that's a
Popeye
god
Jones,
sham god.
Eldon Campbell.
Eldon Campbell. I mean, I could go down the list of 90s players. We could probably do a podcast on just
Just naming 90s players, not even saying anything about them, just naming 90s players.
no analysis, just talking
Just
about.
naming them. There was the greatest card of all time is was in that box. It was this card of Vinny Del Negro sitting on a yoga ball from when he was with the Spurs.
I don't even know what to say to that, dude.
It's incredible. I have it in like all kinds of protective sleeves, the way that most people would. If you had like a Michael Jordan rookie card or something, you would put it in like the hard sleeve and the soft sleeve
Yeah.
and like just keep it super safe. That's the only card that I have that's like that is the Vinny Del Negro yoga ball card.
Yo, is that the kind of hard case that has the little screws in it
Yes,
where
I
you
have.
literally have to pull it apart?
Yes, I have the Vinny Del Negro yoga ball card in one of those.
I have a Rasheed Wallace autograph in one of those, I
I'm
think.
jealous.
I got a Jermaine O'Neal, Rasheed Wallace. I used to wait outside in the loading docks, you know, like where the
Right.
players would go to their cars and where the visiting team would go to the bus. And I was actually talking to my brother last night. We were at the Golden State game. And we were kind of reminiscing about games we'd watched together in the past, and he reminded me of a game we went to
The game
back.
last night was at Oracle, wasn't it? Or was it in
No, that
Portland?
was Moda. Or sorry, Rose Garden.
Okay.
but yeah, we were there last night, we were talking about it, and we went to this. I totally forgot about this. I've been to so many over the years, but it was early 2000s. We went to a game, and I did my usual routine afterward, where we go out to the loading dock and wait for the dudes at their cars, and there was always maybe 15 or 20 fans waiting for the dudes to come out. And you know, Jermaine O'Neal comes out, or Jermaine O'Neal, Rasheed comes out, Damon comes out, Pippen comes out, Bonzi comes out, Detlef comes out, on down the freaking line. And my brother was telling me Rick Brunson walks out. No one says a word, and 14-year-old me is sitting there. I go, "Hey, Mr. Brunson, over here!" And he just kind of looks over like he's kind of confused. Like,
he's just like, "Wait, somebody actually wants my autograph?"
Like, what? Comes over. There's a crowd of like 15 of us. I was the only one who had an actual card of Rick Brunson for him. I had all 15 of the Blazers plus Mike Dunleavy. I big card collector myself in the 90s for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, Dunleavy signed a Bucks when he was coaching the Bucks. I had him on a card that he signed for me. But anyway, Brunson comes over, grabs my card, signs it. Nobody else even like hands him a pen or reaches. So he just signs my autograph and walks away.
That's great. I have one autograph experience. I was never a huge autograph guy, not because I didn't want them, but because I was just never in a position to get them. But when I was like 11, this was during the, you know, one of those years right after the conference finals year, 2001 or 2002 or something like that. Bonzi Wells did an appearance at Lloyd Center Mall,
mm-hmm.
where you could go meet Bonzi Wells. And so I was like, I was 10 or 11. And so I was thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to go get Bonzi Wells' autograph. And so I brought my Can I Get a Headband CD and one of my Bonzi Wells cards. I think I had a Bonzi Wells rookie card. So I brought a couple things for him to sign. He was supposed to be there from 2 to 4. Shows up at 2:45, rolls out at 4 anyway.
You're kidding.
This was the same year that he told Sports Illustrated that they don't care about what the fans think.
Who did he spit on? Did he spit on a fan that year?
Was that him? No, he gave the finger to a fan. Was this the spitting on a fan? That was Charles Barkley.
Okay, so Bonzi flipped off the dude. She threw the towel in Sabonis' face. Quintel used his trading card as a as his license when he got pulled over.
Reuben Patterson.
Oh, jeez.
Sucker punch. Was it Zach Randolph that sucker punched Reuben Patterson and broke his retina, or was it Reuben Patterson that punched Zach? I feel like it was
Zach sucker punched
Reuben Patterson.
Oh, speaking of Rubens, Reuben Boomche. I remember a story that I think it might have been Quick in the Oregonian.
That's a top 5 name in NBA history, by the way.
Boomche.
Yeah.
God Sham God's the number one name, mm-hmm. I think, of all time. Yeah, Boomche's up there. There was a story in the Oregonian about, you know, how the older players were corrupting the younger guys, and this was when Sheed was like a 6 or 7 year vet, and
okay.
Bonzi was a second or third year guy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this anecdote about how they were hanging out at practice with a rack of balls, and Boomche was across the court, you know, practicing with one of the assistant coaches. And she just kind of goes, "Hey, Bonzi, check this out." Grabs a basketball and launches it the length of the court and just freaking drills Boomche in the side of the head. It's funny, slapstick-wise, it's funny. But can you imagine a ball flying 90 feet through the air when you're trying to practice?
Could you imagine if that happened now when everything leaks? Could you imagine now when it's like every because if that story got out about Andrew Bynum getting kicked off the Cavs because he just shot the ball every single time he caught it, somebody would have told some reporter anonymously, somebody would have like told Woj or something that that Rasheed Wallace was, that there was a conflict in the locker room with Rasheed Wallace drilling Ruben Boomchey just for no reason. That would have gotten out, and that would have been a thing on Twitter.
There was a players only meeting, blah blah blah. Oh, yeah,
could you imagine? Could you imagine the? Aren't you so glad as a Blazers fan? Aren't you so glad the Jailblazers weren't overlapping with the existence of Twitter or social media or like the current age of like all everything getting out in different reports?
Yes, yes, and no. I mean, it maybe would have held a few of them a little more accountable at the time, but
right.
Like seriously, for at the time, it was like a national news, like that.
Right. There was a Sports Illustrated story, the one with Bonzi Wellesley doesn't care about the fans. There was this whole story just about how the Blazers were just a joke.
Do you remember the Damon Stoudemire?
Scottie Pippen was just openly saying, "Yeah, I don't want to be here."
Do you remember the Damon Stoudemire urine test?
I don't remember the urine test, but I remember is he tried to bring his weed on the plane with wrapping it in tinfoil and hoping it wouldn't set off the metal detector.
Oh, after that.
That's the one I remember.
And then there was...
Then yeah. He took a urine test like by his locker just in front of reporters, and then the players union got mad at him.
And then, oh my God, there was the 25-point pledge by Patterson and Nash. No five. You...
Yes,
oh.
They were so committed to changing the culture, so much so that they thought there were some kind of character issues with Chris Paul, and so they traded back to draft Martell Webster instead of him.
Oh, well, they had Jarrett Jack, and they got him later in the first round.
They had Jarrett Jack. They don't need Chris Paul.
Oh, we could seriously talk a million years about this. We probably should wrap it up. Let me ask you kind of one more... kind of apropos of nothing question about the NBA, and then we'll wrap it up. Maybe talking a little bit about some playoff stuff real quick. We'll get your take on that, and then we'll head out. But real quick, in 60 seconds or less, can you describe to me your least favorite NBA player of all time and why?
Of all time,
off the top of your dome. If you want me to start, I have a guy on the tip of my tongue.
Can it be a current player?
It could be anybody. It could be a coach.
You can certainly relate to this, I'm sure. This was sort of the last year that I was really a Blazers fan before I was, you know, trying to be more of an objective person. But the last year of really following the Blazers just as a fan was the Raymond Felton year.
That's your least favorite NBA player of all time?
So I think I'd have to go with Raymond Felton.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, that literally requires no explanation on the Blazers Edge podcast.
Right.
To be fair.
I mostly just want to win over your constituents.
No, I get it. You're just pandering. It's fair. It's fine.
And so who's yours?
Dude, Brian Cardinal.
Hey, that's former NBA champion Brian Cardinal. No,
well, former Purdue Boilermaker Brian Cardinal, right?
Brian Cardinal was a rotation player on that 2011 Mavericks team that won the title.
Well, okay, People
forget that. Brian Cardinal was...
I did not forget that. I will never forget that because... One of those games toward the end, it was a meaningless possession with like 3 seconds left. I believe I can't remember who was bringing the ball up and who set the screen, but Patty Mills gets freaking leveled out of nowhere by Brian Cardinal in a meaningless game with 2 seconds left.
I remember that.
Like, come on, dude, that's lame. And then he had that massive mid-level exception deal, I believe, with the Warriors at some point in the early 2000s with the Donald Foyle and whatnot. And I just was like, dude, who is this guy? I've never liked Brian Cardinal. Brian Cardinal, if you're out there listening to the Blazers Edge podcast, like, I'm sorry, dude. I didn't mean to hang out to dry there, but geez, man, that hit on Patty Mills was whack, dude. Oh, boy. At any rate, I just want to let's ask you real quick about some NBA playoff, maybe conference realignment, changing the playoff structure. Is this something that you're in support of, that you're neutral on? Do you have an opinion on playoff restructuring?
I am, actually. I think there are reasons that the conference stuff exists just because it cuts down on travel. But it's such a joke, especially this year. And I think this year is like particularly egregious, where no matter who it is, the two, maybe three back teams in the East playoffs are going to be under 500. And then Phoenix and New Orleans are probably going to get screwed.
Is it to their detriment to make the playoffs? I mean, because wouldn't they want to be involved in the lottery?
They're not going to be high enough in the lottery that they would have get it. Like, cause like, what's the difference? And it's kind of, you know, this is the thing with the, you know, with the Celtics. Weren't the Celtics supposed to be tanking, and now they're probably going to, you know, be one of the teams that makes the playoffs?
Well,
It's like,
nobody wants those last seeds in the
right,
East,
but at a
right?
certain point, but at a certain point though, like, you could get the 10th pick or you could get the 15th pick, and like, what's really the difference? Like, there are a few game-changing guys at the top, and you
Right.
probably have like a 0.1% chance of getting the number one pick if you're the 14th worst team in the league. But at that point, I think you'd rather have the playoff experience. You'd
I
rather
agree.
have your young guys have that experience and being like, hey, we've been to the playoffs. We're not just, you know, tanking.
I completely agree with that.
But, you know, yeah, I think the other thing is just selfishly, I want the Pelicans to be in the playoffs just because I don't want to. I can just see if the West stays the way it is and nobody really falls off. A couple years from now, we're going to be having the Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving. Oh, well, if Anthony Davis is so good, why hasn't he made the playoffs? Like, that conversation is going to happen at some point. So I really want the Pelicans to make the playoffs just so nobody can do that.
I don't know if I'm ready for that hot take yet.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen at some point.
Oh, so frustrating sometimes.
It's going to happen.
So you definitely are in favor of going top
Or at the
16
very at the
teams.
very least, like at the very least, like if they want to do a compromise, guarantee that the top seven teams from each conference get in, and then the last two spots are there's the two best records. Sort of like how in baseball the winner of each division gets in the playoffs, and then the other
Wildcard.
ones are just wild cards and could be anything. The thing that I really think is pointless, more so than the conference, because yeah, the conference stuff, like, you can argue, yeah, some teams are getting screwed by teams and with lesser records in the other conference that are getting in. The world is gonna survive. The thing that I really don't like about the current system is the importance of divisions and how the division winner is the number one tiebreaker. And as someone who covers the Bulls just beat the Raptors tonight. I don't know when you're posting this, but we're recording this on Wednesday night. The Bulls just beat the Raptors tonight for the fourth time this season, so they swept the season series. If the Bulls and the Raptors finish with the same record, the Raptors have the tiebreaker because they won their division, the Bulls didn't. And the Bulls beat them four times in the regular season.
Well, as an unbiased person covering the Blazers, that division title thing, maybe they could wait a year and then change
Right,
that.
because then that means, you know, now that means they're going to get a top four seed. They could not have home court advantage though, because they could get a top four seed and then they could fall behind the Clippers in the record.
Here's the thing. I'll take, hands down, any day of the week, I will take give Houston, Los Angeles Clippers, or Dallas home court in the first round, then an 8-1 or a 7-2 matchup with the Grizzlies or the Warriors. So that's definitely going to work out for the Blazers, regardless of the home court advantage. I mean, I would take that any day over the Grizzlies or the Warriors.
Right. No, I agree.
So, I mean, eventually these divisions and conferences, they're going to be obsolete. I think they're already kind of are becoming that. Like they were there in the first place because teams used to travel on bus and fly coach.
And fly commercial.
So, I
I
mean,
mean, and now I get why conferences need to exist still because of the travel stuff, and it's still a lot of miles, especially a team like the Blazers. Now that there's not a team in Seattle or Vancouver anymore, the Blazers are just kind of alone on an island of the Northwest, and they traveled more miles than anybody else. So I get it from that standpoint. I get why there are conferences, but, you know, it's ridiculous that with how bad those last few teams in the East are that are in the playoff discussion. Like, there is no way that, you know, Indiana or Boston or Miami or Charlotte deserve to be playoff teams more than the Pelicans and the Suns, who are both, A, play a much tougher schedule because they play more games against West teams and they're over 500.
the Jazz could smash any of those teams too in a seven-game series.
The Jazz would be a six seed or a five seed in the East.
You know what? A healthy Sacramento could probably take out the last couple of seeds in the East too.
You know, if they hadn't fired Mike Malone, I'd agree with you, but I'm all the way out on Sacramento after that whole thing. And I mean, George Karl's a good coach and stuff, but that's just there's been so much turmoil with that team. If they hadn't fired Mike Malone and they were still kind of off to that same start that they were at the beginning of the season, I'd agree with you. But
I'd rather watch their D-League team, personally.
The Jazz, absolutely. The Jazz would be a sixth seed in the East.
That's nuts. That is absolutely nuts.
The Jazz are
nuts.
Good.
They are. Yeah, they are now.
Rudy Gobert is legit. Gordon Hayward is legit. Derek Favors, I think Exum is going to be good. You know, Trey Burke, I think his destiny is kind of, you know, that guy off the bench that, you know, Jamal Crawford or Aaron Brooks type of just scorer off the bench. He's going to be good in that role. Derek Favors is good. Rodney Hood, I think, is going to be good. They have guys like they still need to get their, you know, their number. They're kind of like the West version of Orlando in that, like, they have a lot of second complimentary guys. They just need to get the guy. Like, if they had gotten, like, if they could, they're not going to finish low enough in the lottery to get this, but if they could somehow get, like, you know, D'Angelo Russell or Karl Towns or one of those guys, they'd be set.
The Jazz
or the Magic. Those are the two. I think those are teams are kind of analogous, and the Magic didn't do well because Jacques Vaughn is not a good coach.
Both teams are a fairly small market as well, and they've been building through the draft.
Quinn Snyder, he's not going to win, but Quinn Snyder should at least be in the Coach of the Year conversation. He's done a phenomenal job with that team.
Budenholzer and Kerr, I think.
It's going to be one of those two, and I think I'd probably give it to Kerr just because of how dominant they've been. Jason Kidd is another one that I would put in that discussion. Jason Kidd and Brad Stevens, those are like the two next guys.
Yeah. Who would have thought the Bucks would have been playing that kind of defense this year?
Yeah.
Dude, we could do this forever, man.
Yeah.
We're at over an hour. So I think that we should schedule some time in the future. We'll talk 90s Blazer nostalgia. We'll talk 90s NBA stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
NBA raps. We'll do some more research. Maybe we'll talk some nicknames or something. Kind of do a NBA potpourri podcast, if you will.
We'll do that. We'll do that during like August when there is not actual stuff to talk about, like when there's not free agency or playoffs or stuff like that coming up, when we're kind of reaching for topics and you're doing stuff like, I think one year, I think during the lockout on Blazers Edge, they did like the history of the Trailblazers, where it was just this like 10-part series where Dave would write like these 10,000-word recaps of each series, each era of the Blazers. When it's that point in the off season when you're reaching for stuff like that, that's like more big picture and not, you know, based on current things going on with the team, that's when we'll do that.
Are you trying to tell me that top 10 NBA nicknames of all time is not entirely relevant in the middle of a thick playoff race?
Well, it depends on the top nicknames that we're talking about. I mean, if you want me to talk about Swaggy P and JaVale going by Pierre, but also sort of by JaVale, like I think that's more important than any playoff series, but let's wait till like August or let's wait till after Summer League to do that.
I'm going to hold you to it, man.
Yeah. Anytime. This was fun. Anytime you want to have me on, I'm happy to do this.
Sean Hyken, I really appreciate you coming on, man. What's your Twitter handle for Blazers Edge readers if they want to follow you?
My Twitter handle is just my last name, which is H-I-G-H-K-I-N.
Well, that's simple. Blazers Edge listeners, you go ahead and check Sean Hyken out at Hyken on Twitter. He is the Bulls reporter for Bleacher Report and contributes at NBC's Pro Basketball Talk. .com. So go ahead and check that out. Sean, thanks for coming by, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, this was fun.
And that's a wrap on episode 24 of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'd like to thank you for joining us. Make sure to check out awesomeblazershirts.com to see a virtual cornucopia of Blazers-inspired apparel and t-shirts. And make sure to let them know that Blazers Edge sent you. Come back next Tuesday to hear Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons host the Blazers Edge podcast in their normal spot. I'm Chris Lucian, and I'll be back at the end of the week. Take that cash and throw it out.